Welcome, folks, to the Andy Social Podcast. My name is Andy Dowling. I'm the host of this show. And if you didn't know, I also play bass in the Australian heavy metal band Lord. And if you love a bit of 80s tinged heavy metal, you can go over to lord.net.au. We've got heaps of stuff over there, our Spotify playlists, video clips, our whole back catalogue, links to go and buy our merchandise and our music. Everything's over there. If you just want a little bit of a taste of what we're all about, go to lord.net.au. All of our social media links and everything are over there as well. You can go and check out our Instagram pages as well if you want to get a little bit of a behind the scenes look at what we were doing the other weekend, where we were filming a video clip for an upcoming unreleased song from our unannounced, unreleased new album that's coming out soon. That was a real tongue twister to get out of my mouth just then. But go and search for me at Andy Dowling on Instagram. And there's a bunch of videos over there. You can check out some behind the scenes hair twirling. But we've got some new music coming very, very soon. Not a lot of information. Very frustrating because I just want to get it out there. But stay tuned. Keep following us. Keep checking the website as well. We're going to have some really, really cool stuff for you very, very shortly. In addition to playing in a heavy metal band, I also host the Self-Starter Podcast, which is all about small business, self-employment, and freelancing. If you know anybody that's looking to escape the cubicle, earn a little bit of pocket money on the side, or start their own business, or maybe you're one of those people, definitely go over to selfstarter.com.au, or you can search for Self-Starter in your podcast player right now. Well, not right now, wait until this is over. And you can check out all the episodes. There's a blog over there as well, and that's just been going really, really well. So as I say in every single episode of the Andy Social Podcast, thank you so much to everybody that continues to support all the things that I'm involved with outside of this podcast, being the band and Self-Starter and whatever the hell else I get involved with. It means a hell of a lot. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Now, this week's shout out. If you are brand new to the podcast, each and every week I thank somebody that supports me, supports the band, supports anything that I'm involved with. And it can be things such as messages of encouragement, guest recommendations, shouting me a beer via the PayPal button over at andysocial.net. It could be buying some merchandise from the online store, whatever. It doesn't matter. A bit of social media love, you know, sharing, retweeting, liking, commenting, all that sort of stuff. It goes a long way. Every little action that people do, that little 1% more, is just big for me, and it means the world to me, and I really, really appreciate it. So thank you so much for everybody that continues to do amazing things for me. But every week I thank one person. I put them on public record, put their name out there, and it's the least that I can do. It's just one little gesture to say thank you, and I also send something out in the post because we all like getting something in the mail. So this week's shout out is for Lachlan McLeod. Now, Lachlan is from Melbourne, and I met Lachlan at our recent show at Max Watts in Melbourne. We headlined the Metal United Down Under Festival at Max Watts, I think it was the 22nd of September. But I met Lachlan after the show, and actually Simon Lewis, previous podcast guest of the Andy Social Podcast, introduced me to Lachlan, and I got chatting to Lachlan a bit after the show, and then Lachlan actually has a blog and his own podcast, and he put up this really, really cool review of the show and us on his blog, and I will link to it. It's Lachlan McLeod, and I'm so bad at pronunciation, but it's L-A-C-H-L-A-N-M-C-L-E-O-D. I'm pretty sure that's McLeod, isn't it? It's not McLeod. It's McLeod. So LachlanMcLeod.blogspot.com, or you can search for the Lachlan McLeod show as well on your podcast player as well. He's got his podcast show. But I wanted to read out really quickly, and you'll have to bear with me because I suck at reading things out, but Lachlan left a really, really cool review from the show and just from our encounter as well. And I thought I'd read it out because it's just really generous and just means a lot to me. And I just want to be able to repay the generosity back to you, Lachlan, as well. But I'll quickly read, and bear with me, folks. Lord were the headliners on this occasion, and I couldn't have been more pleased. This was the closest I'd ever been, which made it more memorable. It also helped that it was a well-rounded set. I joined in with the pirate-themed Terrenal Del Mar, as I always do. I also got right into Set in Stone, which has become Gary's and I song. Oh, sorry, I might have written that out wrong. But by the way, that's Gary. I think that's Gary Carson, who was on episode 118 of the podcast, Gary from Screaming Symphony. Covering all bases, Lord played part of the Maiden classic Heaven Can Wait to a tremendous reaction. That's very true. We did play Heaven Can Wait. It was a lot of fun. I continued. Immediately after their set, I was fortunate enough to meet Andy Dowling, the bass player from Lord. To say I was thrilled is a massive understatement, a true gentleman and someone I have a lot in common with. I quickly suggested double dipping by being guests on each other's podcasts. Now to find the time to get it done. Double dipping. I love that term. But yes, absolutely, Lachlan. Let's do each other's podcast. I'd love to get you on. I think you've got a lot of cool things to say and a really interesting story as well. So we'll definitely work that out sometime in the near future. And I'm more than happy, and I'd love to be on yours as well. So please shoot me a message when you hear this. I'm going to send you out some stuff in the post. I've got a lot of crap lying around the house, but we all like getting something in the mail, and it's a bit of a surprise and just the least that I can do for your generosity and kind words. So thank you very much, Lachlan. Really, really appreciate it.
Alrighty, folks. This week's episode is with Michael Yardney. Now, if you don't know who Michael is a property expert. He's been named Australia's leading property investment advisor by Your Investment Property magazine. He is a leading expert in the psychology of success and wealth creation. He is a number one best-selling author of 8 books. He's got his own podcast, the Michael Yardney Podcast. He does a lot of stuff. He has been in the game for the past several decades. He has amassed a considerable amount of success and wealth, and somebody that I certainly pay attention to and look up to and have a lot of respect for. So when he's got something to say, I am all ears. I'm a massive fan of his podcast. I've got a real fascination with property investment, although to be completely honest, I know bugger all, but it's interesting nonetheless. And in one particular facet of his podcast, he has his mindset moments, which I really, really enjoy. And it's all about getting a different perspective and learning to change our behaviors and look at things from probably a more glass half full perspective rather than a glass half empty outlook. So we talk about a lot of this in this podcast. I'm going to have links to everything that Michael's involved with in the show notes over at andysocial.net. You can also scroll down in your podcast player. You should be able to click on the links, but you can go to michaelyardney.com, and that is his big portal to everything that he's involved with. There's a lot of information there. So this chat is really, really great. If you are in the market to buy your first property or your second or your third or your fifth or whatever it might be, Michael's got some really good advice and perspective here. And there's a lot of comments here to take away. And I certainly got a lot out of having this great chat with Michael. So enough of me. Please enjoy this really, really great chat with Michael Yardney. Would you be able to give a little bit of your origin story? And before kicking in, one thing that sort of frames this quite well is that I read online that your first property was purchased with a $2,000 deposit, which nowadays is pretty unbelievable. So just a bit of your background, a bit of your origin story.
Having said that, it was a lot of money in those days.
Absolutely.
Well, Andy, I started in property investment in the early 1970s. I was in my early 20s. I'd actually saved a little bit of money. I worked part-time while I went to university and saved a deposit. And I knew I wanted to be rich at those days. And so property investment seemed like the way to go. I didn't have enough deposit to do it on my own. We bought a property in Light Street, South Caulfield, and I made all the classic beginner mistakes. It was one of the first properties I saw. It was right close to where I lived, where I went to school, around the corner from where my mother went shopping. It was in my own backyard. But fortunately, it worked out for me. We paid $18,000. I actually went half with my parents. So I put $2,000 deposit. And we got $12 a week rent, and I was so excited. Really, what happened, though, was that the Labor government came in. Inflation went wild. And that property went up in value so much, a few years later, I had enough equity to buy another one. Then I got married a few years afterwards, and I made another mistake. I actually sold my properties. I sold that first property for a half share of it had gone up to $32,000. I bought it back from my mum with my wife Pam now in the early 2000s for $256,000. And since then, we've built two townhouses on it. So my first property, $18,000 all those years ago, is worth over $2 million today, Andy.
It's incredible. And as you mentioned earlier, money definitely has a different value back then compared to now, sorry.
Sure.
But it's obviously that long-term approach and having that patience is definitely a key sort of factor with a lot of these things as far as investing for your future.
Well, who wouldn't have liked to buy the house their parents bought for the price their parents paid years ago?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially when you sort of look online, you look at a property value and you see the history online now, which is fantastic. There's a lot more transparency these days. And you look at some of those prior sale prices for a particular property and you just think, geez, I wish I had my wits about me, you know, even just 10 years ago. But it's just incredible to see that progress.
But there's always reasons not to. And at the moment, Andy, there's lots of negative media and people are nervous about the future. But just look back 10 years ago, global financial crisis when everyone was nervous too. Anyone who bought a good property in Sydney or Melbourne between then and now, look where they would be today.
Absolutely. That's right. And I think you just touched on this, and this is going to be one of the things I wanted to quickly touch on with you and speak to you about and get your opinion. A lot of the people that listen to this podcast and people that are in my circles definitely get a lot of noise from the media. And I think there's a lot of talk and a lot of language being used around affordability. And this has been the case for quite a long time, quite a few years. But there's always this defeatist attitude where it's, well, this is just outside of my reach. It's unattainable. And so there's almost this, let's give up now and not bother with pursuing the hope of owning a home. And whether it be, you know, something that you live in or it becomes something that you want to use as an investment property, there's just definitely been a lot of stuff put through the media to put a lot of fear into people. And then as a result, people either don't take action or they take action, but for the wrong reasons, and usually end up regretting the decisions that they make.
Well, it's actually not just with property. I've learned over the years, whether it's property investment, business, entrepreneurship, success in anything, sports, relationship, there's two ways of thinking about it. So you can either think, oh, that other person's done it, somebody else has managed to do it, and it's because they can, so have I, so can I can do it too. Or there's the other, as you correctly say, more defeatist attitude, oh, well, there's only so much the money to go around, so many people, they've done it, so I've missed out my turn. So it's either that limited pie view that, you know, they've got their big portion of the pie, there's nothing left for me, or get the expanded pie, just make the whole thing much bigger and we can all share some of it. A lot of it has to do with the media looking for sensational headlines, clickbait, and other people, including some of the journalists, being jealous and greedy and they're pushing down people's hopes and dreams. In Australia, as opposed to other countries in the world, I assume a lot of your listeners are from Australia, We're the lucky country. It's the best time in the history. We're living in the wealthiest nation in the world. Anyone can do it if they give it a try.
And just touching on some of those things, what do you think are some of the, I guess, those hot topics that are myths that are being put out there at the moment that people are sort of getting distracted by? Is there anything particular that you're noticing, even just over the last couple of years, that have just been something that's been elevated and focused on far more than necessary?
Well, at the moment, we're experiencing a crisis in confidence. People are nervous. People are worried. They're hearing that there's a property bubble that's going to burst. They're hearing values of homes are going down. They're hearing that there's a whole generation of people who will never be able to afford a home. And it's related to the way the media wants to draw our attention. Negative news sells better than positive news. Interestingly, times aren't that bad. The fundamentals are good. Our economy is doing well. Anyone who wants a job can get a job. Population growth is growing nicely, which is going to underpin our economy. Having said that, I'm finding people more nervous than they were 10 years ago during the global financial crisis, when we had real reason to be nervous. We had no idea what was going on. The world was going broke. Countries were going bankrupt. Big institutions were going bankrupt. So the media just loves scaring us. And unfortunately, the media has changed. There are very few good commentators in the mainstream press, in the big press. It's now left to journalists who are chasing clickbait through following media releases that are being put out. So they're nice people, they're just inexperienced.
That's one of the hard things I think people have at the moment, that challenge of trying to cut through the noise. We've got so much information at our fingertips now, and it gets to a point where there's just so much noise out there that you're really trying to identify and understand what is fact and what is fiction. And it's really, really difficult when there's a lot of stuff, as you mentioned before, that's been sensationalized and blown out of proportion. And so for people that might be naturally, they have a tendency to naturally sort of lean on the risk side of things. So they're always looking at things from a potentially like a glass half full perspective, glass half empty, I should say, then it's really, really hard to sort of find the right commentary out there.
Well, unfortunately, it's very easy to look good today. You can get a website, you can get a LinkedIn presence. I found somebody recently who opened up a LinkedIn account and had 14,000 friends and contacts within 2 weeks. I don't know how he did it. But you can actually make yourself look bigger and better than you are without having to have had a track record. That's one of the downsides of social media, I guess. And so therefore, it's easy for people with a vested interest to go out there and take advantage of people. Happens every cycle where there's a new wave of people who've never experienced this before, and they're open to suggestion from the next round of gurus who are there to take their money with scams, or the journalists who I speak to them. I continuously get contacted by the media, and there's some really nice people out there in the media, but most of them are young. Most of them haven't got their own home. Most of the property journalists haven't got the experience, the perspective that you can only get from doing the hard yards and having all the failures. So I'm a real success at failure. I'm going to be 66 next month. I've been investing for over 40 years. Boy, have I learned a lot of lessons. And that's when I'm speaking to other people in my generation, my age group, or other commentators who've been around. They're not worried. This is normal. This is what has to happen. After every boom, there's a downturn. The bigger the boom, the bigger the downturn. And then next cycle gets set. Each boom sets itself up for the next downturn, as each downturn sets itself up for the next upturn. And for the 6,500 years that they've been recording calendars and days and histories, spring always follows winter. It has for 6,500 years. I'm putting my money on spring following winter again this time around.
That's a good bet. I think it's one of those things where, especially where people that haven't had as much life experience can't see that long term, and it's a lot difficult. Yeah. It's a lot more difficult to sort of plan ahead and envision what's going to happen. But I think when you can understand that it's completely fine to make mistakes, and sometimes taking action, and I use that in a very sort of, not in a reckless sort of manner, but to take action and to experiment along the way, but also to not panic and have that long-term approach would certainly, pay dividends later on.
When I first started investing, I knew none of this stuff. First of all, there wasn't the internet. There were very few books. Most of them were American about property investment. Statistics came out a year or more in arrears. In other words, you had no idea about what house values were doing. And so I, as I said, bought in my comfort zone, close to where I lived, close to where I went to school. I just happened to luck it out. So today, there's the other extreme. There's too much information, too much statistics. And as you said, it's actually hard to sort out what to do. And when everything looks important, how do you understand the priorities? And if everything's important, I guess nothing's important. So you've got to find somebody who's done it, who's been there, and get advice. See, the trouble is in Australia, we have 25 million property experts. Everybody believes they're a property expert. Everybody has lived in a home or rented a home. And so that's the typical barbecue talk. And you'll hear from people, don't do that, it's dangerous. Don't do that, it's risky. They're talking from their own experience.
Oh, I can completely relate to that. And as you said, there's 25 million of us, and everyone's an expert in their own setting. But it's I think a lot of people, and I mean, my wife and I, we bought our own home in the first one, and it was a bit of a foot in the door to get into the market and
well done,
and take that long term approach. And so we made sure that we purchased something that was affordable and something that could keep our overheads really low, so we could start to build that next deposit and then gradually work our way up and get those idealistic properties in those idealistic locations. But I think
may I interrupt for a second and say well done, because one of the things I see with a lot of the younger people is they're comparing their chapter one with somebody else's chapter 40. They're wanting to start off in the home it took their parents 40 years to afford. They want all the fancy appliances. They want a media room. They want a big place. And it just doesn't work that way. So I'm really pleased to hear your story. Good way to start.
It's definitely a hard thing psychologically to be able to establish that and get clarity on that decision, because as you said, where I think a lot of us naturally sort of lean towards comparing what our peers, our friends, our family are doing or have done. And so we want to get out there and do our own thing and establish ourselves and, I guess, put ourselves in comparison to others. And so it's very difficult at times to sort of take a step back and really have that patience and that long-term sort of approach. And it is a hard thing to do, but it's certainly more exciting when you start to get that clarity. You understand that it's not the immediate fight, but it's the long war, and we're in it for the long term.
Well, it's not just the long-term approach. That's definitely part of it. The other part is having a sense of delayed gratification, not wanting it all now. And that's one of the traits of successful business people, entrepreneurs, investors, even in your career, people take a few years out to get a trade, get an education, get a profession to make them more likely to have better job satisfaction and higher income in the future. The alternative, of course, is to not bother going to uni, get a job, earn a bit of cash up front, but then you're going to find that in general your upside is limited. So whether it's property investment or anything else, delayed gratification is something that one has to actually practice and learn. You can either have a small amount now or a lot more later on.
Yeah, that's it. It can be a very difficult thing to grasp and practice, but it certainly can have dramatic benefits as well by practicing that. And just off the back of what you said there and bringing that up, a big thing, and I listen to your podcast, and for me, I'm not somebody that is completely immersed in the property investment world, and I don't know a lot about it, but I really get a lot of value out of it because of the mindset aspects of your podcast. And a lot of it around that psychology of success and also building wealth. And I've looked at your long list of books that you've been a part of. You've co-authored or authored yourself. But one book in particular that I think was one of the more recent ones that you've put out is the Rich Habits, Poor Habits book that you co-wrote with Tom Corley.
Yeah. Mm.
And it's something that I find quite fascinating and I'm really interested about. I'd like to just touch on it just briefly with you, because I think a lot of things that we do in day-to-day life, our habits, our mannerisms, the language that we use, we don't realize, but it's actually probably poor habits that we have embraced and we've inherited from family and friends and our environment and school and all sorts of things, and it actually holds us back, but we don't really understand, or we don't have that clarity. And I think your approach is trying to change that mindset and that perspective to look at things from a different angle.
Well, what I've learned over the years, and it took me a long time to learn this, but when I suddenly realized that personal development, improving yourself, changing yourself, makes a big, big difference. And if you don't grow to be another level in all sorts of ways, you're never going to maintain the wealth that most of us want. Let me put it a different way. I believe if you took all the money in the world and distributed it evenly, it would be back in the same proportions again pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Because if you suddenly attain wealth, get a lottery win, get an inheritance, get a raise, if you don't know how to handle the money, you tend to lose it. So I've learned that whether it's sport, whether it's music, whether it's psychology, whatever business, property investment, whichever your area of interest is, a lot of it has to do with your headspace and your mindset. The other thing I learned over the years is that people learned a lot of the way they think about everything in their life before the age of 9 or 10. See, we are today a product of what our parents taught us in the first years of our life. They were our models, our role models, and things we heard, things we saw, things we experienced as a child. In those days, with the mind of a child not being able to interpret it right, but perceive it the way we did as a kid, is still underneath us today. So a large percentage of what we do every day is done by habit. It's the shortcuts our mind takes to make us more efficient, so you don't have to keep thinking about things. But these shortcuts that it takes are probably not relevant today, or as relevant, because the way you're thinking about them was related to the way you learned it as a child. So, yes, the mindset moments in my podcast, I think I continue to get the most reviews about that. They're the most exciting bit, the most bit that people want. And it's thrown in there because if we just teach people money or finance or property and they don't know how to improve themselves, and they're never going to get to the next level. So people have got rich habits, poor habits. People are driving around with one foot on the brake as well as one on the accelerator. The accelerator, we've got all these empowering beliefs, but boy, we all got a list of disempowering beliefs, even the most successful of us, Andy.
It's that foundation, isn't it? I mean, you need that foundation of being able to look at things and approach things and have your behavior be directed in that appropriate direction in order to build and then maintain that wealth or that success or whatever that success means to you. And that's up to interpretation of the individual, but you need that foundation.
Well, what happened was I started mentoring people about 12 years ago. I've mentored over 2,500 people, and I've found some traits common in all successful people, and interestingly, different traits common in those who weren't as successful. And similarly, Tom Corley, my co-author of that particular book, studied a lot of his clients. He was a CPA to see what's going on. See, Andy, I used to do more frequent seminars. I don't now as many. I only do one a year. But I'd have 500-600 people in the room, and I'd give my best information. And you know what would happen? A small group, I don't know, 5%, would actually do something, take action, move forward, become financially independent through property, and 95% didn't. And so I thought, I'm not doing it right. So I gave longer seminars. I gave all-day ones. I gave weekend ones. Mm. I've had guest speakers. And the same thing happened. A really small group of people took action, and the majority didn't. And that used to disturb me because I wanted to be good at what I was doing. And I realized it all has to do with it. I eventually realized it all has to do with their mindset.
And how did you navigate that, I guess, moving forward when you identified that? Was there something that you tweaked from your approach and your delivery? Or, I mean, really, it comes back to the individual themselves and their own set of circumstances, because everybody's variables, I mean, they're so varied, you know, so it's very difficult to cut through to people and their own set of circumstances. But I guess part of having those mindset moments is helping people develop those tools and get better at looking at things from the right perspective. But was there things that you had to do as far as the delivery of your message out there with those conferences that you were holding to try and capture more of those people?
Well, I guess the delivery changed from not just speaking about property and wealth creation and finance, but actually talking about mindset. Mm. Because most people didn't recognize that. Because what they're doing is, no one wants to be bad. No one wants to be poor. They just keep doing the same things over and over again, not recognizing that it's not going to get any different. So the first thing is for them to recognize their poor learning that they had as a child, because most of us didn't have good mentors. So our parents were well-meaning, but people weren't very rich. So when I say put up your hands, who's got multimillionaire parents in the room? Occasionally one of my kids is in the room and they put up their hands, and that's actually a bit of fun. But otherwise, every now and then there's somebody who puts their hand up, and I say, don't you think the conversations around their kitchen table are different than the conversations around your kitchen table when you grew up? Yeah. So just what happened naturally there. So first of all, you've got to recognize that you've got to remove some of the disempowering beliefs and replace them. See, I grew up in a very poor household. My father's idea of financial freedom, of how to attain it, was winning the lottery. Every Saturday morning, he'd sit at the kitchen table having a cigarette and drinking a black coffee, and he would write down the list of all the things he was actually going to do when he won the lottery that night. Yeah, he never won it. I mean, he won little bits to actually get him to buy lottery tickets again. So clearly gambling's a tax for people who can't do maths, but that's the best financial plan that most people have. They don't owe different.
And a lot more focused on that risk and you know, certainly from me and being a few years younger, but even me growing up, you know, certainly seeing my grandparents, my parents and other friends and their families, the way that they spoke about money in general was always it wasn't freely spoken about. It wasn't something that was just comfortably discussed, and wasn't a topic that we'd all gravitate towards. And if it was discussed, then it was usually under negative circumstances. So there's always an element of fear.
Interesting, isn't it? Yeah, that's right. Dirty money, filthy rich, They must have raped, robbed, and pillaged to get their money. So if you grow up with all these bad thoughts about money, and you believe you're a good person, but you want to get wealthy, then again, yes, what I was saying, you're driving around with one foot on the accelerator and one on the brake. You want to become wealthy, but on the other hand, you think, oh, that's not right. And it's interesting. All this is at a subconscious level. So that's why I see a lot of people sabotage themselves financially and in business as well. So some people are scared of failing. Others are actually scared of succeeding because they're not sure they deserve it.
Well, it's also that, I mean, people have embraced it in the past, but it's such a bad thing. I mean, we've got that tall poppy syndrome in Australia, and I think it's gotten better over the years, but it's still there. And in some ways, people have embraced it as this symbol of pride in our culture that, you know, we cut people down and keep everybody grounded. Nobody can get their head above the rest. And I think that's held back a lot of people from really sort of pursuing things that they are passionate about and want to succeed in, whether it be something that's financially related or something that's development for themselves. I think a lot of people are reluctant to take that step out of fear of being ridiculed by other people.
Andy, that's an interesting point because you mentioned a while ago that one of my books is being co-authored with Tom Corley, who's American, and he comes here every year to our 5-day workshop wealth retreat. I mentioned this tall poppy syndrome to him a couple of years ago. He said, what? They don't have that in America.
They certainly don't.
In America, they admire entrepreneurs. They admire successful people. They aspire to become that way. And this is one of the traits of successful people. They actually admire other people's success rather than try to cut them down. And again, that should be happening more in Australia. And I agree with you. It is less than it was before, but it's definitely out there still. And that's what's held people back. One of the many things that holds people back.
Well, that's right. And in your opinion, where do you think a lot of that's come from in our culture with the tall poppy syndrome? Because obviously, I agree, like when you turn to the United States and you see it through their culture and the way they talk, and I've got a lot of friends from the United States, they don't have that. They really celebrate each other and their success and really push people to be unashamed with what they want to do and be passionate about the things that they love in their life. And here it's very different. But where do you think some of that stuff has come from in our culture?
That's interesting because we're both reasonably young nations, which both came out of bondage not that many hundred years ago from England. Having said that, in Australia, there seems to be more a culture of the world owes you something, an entitlement mentality, and we should all be much the same. Now, I have no issue with us all being the same. I want to drag people up and come to the top rather than drag people down. But there seems to be more an entitlement that the government owes us. I actually only a couple of days ago read that almost half of our nation receives a government benefit of some sort or another. And considering we ranked amongst the wealthiest countries in the world, and recently the Credit Suisse report said we've got the wealthiest median income in the world, and the fact that our poor people are wealthier than most wealthy people in other countries, when you look at all those third world countries, why do we still feel that way? And I think it's the way, in many ways, we were brought up. People will be parents who are a bit embarrassed that they haven't been as successful as other people, will then knock others down so that they don't feel as bad about their lack of success.
Yeah, I think it's going to take a long time to shift that. And
it's a cultural thing.
It absolutely is, yeah. And I think with us being so connected globally, I think we can start to see a lot more of how other people are doing good and how people are celebrating success. And especially, I think, entrepreneurs and startups and all these buzzwords and terms are certainly popular at the moment. And I think that's probably helping in some ways, because I think that's allowing people to take a stab at something and take action. But I think it is a long road, but it is exciting to see that there are some shifts in mentality. But it's something that, as I got clarity in my own journey, looking around and and understanding why I was reluctant to take steps, and then realizing, oh, right, this is me being fearful of what other people may think of me. And then once I started to articulate that, I thought, that's actually quite ridiculous. And so you don't realize these things because a lot of it's so ingrained in us, and it's in that autopilot sequence where we just sort of, you know, breeze through life, and we've got these habits that have been formed, and it's very hard to break them.
What other people think of you is none of your business.
Absolutely right. I like that. Very good. So one other thing I wanted to touch on before we wrap it up, because a lot of this and a big thing about my podcast is speaking with lots of different people from different backgrounds, because the more I hear from different people that I don't frequent in, I don't have a lot of knowledge in, I start to learn new perspectives and new things. And the people that listen in get that same sort of value as well. But one of the things that I find really interesting about your approach is going back to those rich habits, poor habits, is the psychology around it and looking at it from different angles. And I know that there's not just one clear way to achieve an outcome. There's a multitude of ways, and there's always a lot of ways that are sometimes unorthodox. And one topic that you spoke about not too long ago on your podcast was rent vesting. And the psychology around that. And this is something that my wife and I are looking to do in the next 12 months or so. And we've been listening to a lot of podcasts and reading about it. And it's something that I think in the past is very unorthodox. It's very counterintuitive. But would you be able to explain a little bit about what rent vesting is? And I think this is something that a lot of people that are struggling to either buy their first property or buy their second property, this is actually something that could help tick some of those boxes for them.
Okay, well, thanks for asking. Now, rent vesting is unorthodox in Australia, but in fact, in many other parts of the world, it's very normal. If you lived in London, if you lived in New York, if you lived in Paris, if you lived in much of Europe, you actually wouldn't be even thinking about buying your home at your age. Many people are tenants all their lives, but actually still have investments, whether it's in shares, whether it's in businesses or residential real estate elsewhere as well. So the concept of rent vesting is foreign in Australia because many of us were brought up with the notion that rent money is dead money, and others were brought up with the notion that if you're half wealthy, you should own a home, the oldest, great Australian dream. And if you don't own a home and if you rent, you're somehow or other a second-class citizen. Of course, that's not true. So we did touch on earlier that affordability is an issue, and I'm going to show my age here now, but affordability always has been an issue. It was an issue for me when I first bought my first investment. I had to go house with my parents. When I bought my first home, when I first got married many, many years ago, it was an apartment. It was a small apartment. It wasn't a house, anything like what my parents had. So affordability has always been an issue. And interestingly, one study after the other shows that it's actually not harder today than it was before. I think what's different is the expectations of what people wanting to get into is higher today. Young people want to start at a high level. Having said that, the concept is that if you can't afford to own a property where you want to live, you should rent, and in the meantime, use your money elsewhere to buy an investment in an area where you can afford. And that's a good concept as long as the area you can afford is still an investment grade area rather than a secondary area. So people say, well, what about this rent money being dead money? And I'll give an example. And imagine we both live in an apartment building next door to each other. And one day we meet out in the corridor and I say, I'm sick of this. Every month, Andy, I've got to actually pay some body corporate fees, and I've got to pay some maintenance and insurance. I've got a deal. Why don't you live in my apartment for a year and I'll live in yours? You give me $500 a week rent. I give you $500 a week rent. So my rent money isn't dead money because actually somebody else is paying me money. I'm getting a cash flow neutral. Having said that, though, all of a sudden, my expenses are tax deductible. The outgoings, the body corporate fees, I get depreciation allowance maybe, and the repairs and maintenance are actually a tax deduction. So cash flow wise, it makes a lot of sense as long as you then use your money productively to make money in a growing asset that's going to give you good benefits. Then living in a nice place that you can't afford, as long as you don't go to the top, using your money wisely, the concept of rent vesting, it has become the way a lot of people have got their foot into the property market. I see no issue with that at all.
It's, I mean, and I think one of the, because you weighed up the pros and cons when you spoke about it, and I think the biggest con that was there was just the psychology around it. It was having to get past that whole, as you said before, rent money is dead money, that thing that we've been told for decades. And once you get past that, I think, and that's one of the biggest hurdles, as long as you're disciplined and you're approaching it, you know, relatively sensibly with those expenses and then the way that you sort of, I guess, budget these decisions that you make, it's actually quite a positive strategic move to make.
Definitely. Having said that, you've got to have a longish time frame. So if you're a beginner and you say, okay, this is my first property and I'm going to buy an investment property first and then I'm going to buy a home, really you can't buy a property every year. It's going to take time for the equity to grow, for your savings to for the next deposit, serviceability. So you'd have to have sensible timeframes that may take quite a few years before you can get into that ideal home, which may be a little bit more expensive, but it's definitely a great stepping stone into the property market.
And I think also the other thing is with rent vesting, another positive is that you can live in an area that provides more opportunity. You can, and that brings other types of return on investment.
Definitely.
So, you know, career opportunities,
time,
absolutely, networking, you know, different contacts, different opportunities in a range of different ways. And so you get a lot of additional value, not just by the mechanics of, you know, building that that next deposit for, you know, or making it cash flow neutral. So there's definitely a number of different benefits there.
The cons are generally emotional. So the pros are very positive, like you said a moment ago, and the cons are, oh, it's not my own home. I can't put a picture on the wall without asking landlord's permission. I could get kicked out. But in fact, most investors don't want to kick out their tenants. They were there for long-term investments. So most tenants have got good security. And I actually know that in a number of my properties, I have got people who are rent investors who rent in some of the places that I own, some nicer properties, and because they wanted to get into school zones, for example, with their kids, and have kept their old home that they used to move out, they moved out of, and kept that as an investment property.
I love it. I've got so many things to think about after our chat. Certainly inspired, and it's something that I've found since getting into the market, certainly getting excited about the future long term, and just looking at what I can do and what we can do as my wife and I, and what we can do to sort of build that wealth and build that success for both of us. And there's a lot of ways of doing it, but I think the biggest thing that I'm seeing is looking at it from a different angle, and there's not just one correct way, but also having that patience as well.
I think that's an important factor, that you've actually got to have the patience and the delayed gratification, and then realize there isn't just one way, as you clearly said, but the other way is to get good mentors around you, not to try and do it all yourself. One of the big things that changed my life and my growth in personally and in my business is getting mentors who you can stand on their shoulders and you end up seeing much, much further. They're there to see your blind spots. They're there to correct you. They're there to keep you aligned. So be careful, though, because there's lots of mentoring programs that are really salespeople, marketers in disguise, trying to sell you something. And some of these mentors can be virtual, such as listening to podcasts like this, reading blogs. So you don't necessarily have to see them or pay them. But on the other hand, you also probably should invest in getting mentors and coaches, just like all the sports people have coaches who help them achieve the goals that they couldn't have achieved on their own.
Surrounding yourself with a good team.
Important.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, I am going to link to absolutely everything that you're involved with. I went through your website the other day and I thought, oh, geez, there's a lot of stuff here that you've been involved with. And as you know, you've got a long career there. So I'm going to make sure that everybody has got plenty of opportunities to learn more about you and what you've achieved. And Michael, thank you so much for your time, and look forward to continuing to listen to the podcast as well.
My pleasure. Let me leave you with one thought for your listeners. Wealth is the transfer of money from the impatient to the patient.
I love it.
Not my thought. It's Warren Buffett's, but it's true.
Well, I think that's a good person that that they can come from as well. So fantastic. Thank you very much, Michael.
My pleasure.
Thank you, folks. Hope you enjoyed that chat with Michael Yardney. If you want to reach out to Michael and learn a little bit more about all the things he's involved in, and there's quite a few things, you can go to michaelyardney.com. He's also on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Google Plus, of all things. I might have to go and check out Google Plus again. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know what's going on over there. He's also got his own YouTube channel. I digress. But if you go to michaelyardney.com, there's all the information there, all the links. He's got his blog, his newsletter, his podcast. There is so much information there. It's really, really valuable if you want to learn more about Michael and all the things he's involved in. As always, you can go to the show notes as well over at andysocial.net. If you click in your podcast player for the show notes for this episode, I'll have clickable links there, including direct links to all 8 of the books that Michael has authored. And speaking of books, I highly, highly recommend checking out the book Rich Habits, Poor Habits that Michael co-wrote with Tom Corley, I should say, that we spent quite a bit of time speaking about in this episode. I'm really, really fascinated with shifting behaviors and the psychology around and the way that we approach day-to-day life. And I certainly know from my own journey and this podcast in particular, the more people I talk to and the more that I learn about behavior and everybody else's individual journeys and their own thoughts and perspectives, I've certainly had a lot more clarity in my own life and a lot more control, which means I've become a lot happier and the stress has gone down. And I certainly am achieving far more than I ever have before. And it's come from people such as Michael and the information that Michael puts out there in the public domain, as well as all the people that have been on the podcast to date as well. So michaelyardney.com, make sure you check it out. Thank you so much to Michael. Absolutely stoked to be able to have that conversation. And I hope that at some stage in the future, we can catch up again. All right, time to wrap this all up. If you want to learn more about me and everything that I'm involved with, you can go to lord.net.au, you can go to andysocial.net, you can go to selfstarter.com.au, or you can go to my wanky new website, andydowling.net, that's been put together by Adrian. Thank you so much, Adrian, for making me look somewhat professional. You can go over to andydowling.net and all my information's over there, all the things that I'm involved with, and I'll continue to add to that website over the coming whatever, but you can go there and check it all out. A bunch of episodes coming up for the end of this year, the tail end of 2018. I've got heaps of guests coming up, covering a whole range of different topics, comedy, art, math, of all things, photography, an entertainer from overseas, really, really out there. And I'm really struggling to describe it because I haven't quite spoken to this person yet. But that's coming up in the next week or so. I'm going to record that. And I'm looking forward to the chat, but I'm really struggling to understand how to describe this person and what they do. I'll leave it at that, but that's coming up and that should be a really, really good episode. And I'm sure by the time it comes out, I should have a better idea of how to describe what the hell they do. But anyway, enough of that. Thank you so much for supporting the podcast and everything that I do. It means a hell of a lot to me. And until next week, folks, ta-ta. Larry, please.